Today on The 21st Show, conservative activist Charlie Kirk grew up in Illinois. His murder this week during an event in Utah has dominated national news. Kirk was both an astute political organizer and a master of the attention economy. His messages spark both controversy and loyalty from college campuses to the White House. We'll talk about Charlie Kirk's life, his work, and the increasing normalization of political violence in America. I'm Brian Mackey. That's all coming up today on The 21st Show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media, airing on WILL in Urbana, WUIS in Springfield, WGLT in Bloomington-Normal, WNIJ in Rockford-DeKalb, WVIK in the Quad Cities, and WSIU in Carbondale. But first, the news from NPR. From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. And today we're spending the hour on Charlie Kirk. Born and raised in the suburbs of Chicago, Kirk mostly skipped college in order to start a political organization that became a behemoth in American conservatism. He frequently made appearances on college campuses where he would stand before hundreds, sometimes thousands of students, debating whatever issue people wanted to ask him about. Earlier this year, a profile in the New York Times Magazine called him the youth whisperer of the American right. But as well as he did connecting with college students, he had also been effective in wielding power behind the scenes at the highest levels in Republican politics, helping J.D. Vance rise to vice president, helping Pete Hegseth survive allegations of sexual assault to be confirmed as defense secretary. Beyond all that, he was host of one of the most listened to podcasts in America. Let's listen to a montage that gives some sense of his importance to the MAGA movement and how he approached some very divisive issues in American politics.
How we doing, Georgia? I'll tell you, this is a historic moment, everybody. By the way, have you been seeing the early voting numbers out of this state?
I want to thank my great friend. And he's a young friend. He's a pretty young guy, Charlie Kirk. I said, how old are you, Charlie? He's a young one. He gave me a number I won't say, but he's younger than he even looks. But I want to thank Charlie. He's an incredible guy. His spirit, his love of this country. He's done an amazing job. He's done something that is just incredible for somebody really of his age. You need tremendous talent to do what he's done. Building one of the most powerful youth organizations ever created, Turning Point USA, and I want to thank you, really, Charlie, incredible job.
I'm sorry, if I see a black pilot, I'm going to be like, boy, I hope he's qualified.
If we would have said that Joy Reid and Michelle Obama and Sheila Jackson Lee and Ketanji Brown Jackson were affirmative action picks, we would have been called the racist. But now they're coming out and they're saying it for us. They're coming out and they're saying, I'm only here because of affirmative action. Yeah, we know. You do not have the brain processing power to otherwise be taken really seriously.
Jewish communities have been pushing the exact kind of hatred against whites that they claim to want people to stop using against them. Now, I don't like generalizations. Not every Jewish person believes that. But it is true, the Anti-Defamation League was part and parcel with Black Lives Matter.
The one issue I think that is so against our senses, so against the natural law, and dare I say, a throbbing middle finger to God, is the transgender thing happening in America right now.
The root issue is, to be philosophically consistent, a woman or a man, especially a woman in pregnancy, does not have a right to terminate another human being, regardless if it's in their utero, in their nursery, or whether it's in their car.
All right, that last piece of tape on abortion was from one of these debating events at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign this April. Charlie Kirk was shot to death at a political rally this week. He was 31 years old. He was married. He was the father of a very young son and daughter. Authorities have arrested Tyler Robinson, age 22, after a manhunt that lasted about a day and a half. Utah Governor Spencer Cox told reporters this morning that he is believed to have acted alone. Later in the program, we'll take a step back and consider the growing normalization of political violence in America with Nick Grossman, a political scientist at the University of Illinois. But first, someone who knew Kirk. Marco Sukovich first met him when they were both interns for former Illinois Congressman Bob Dold's campaign in 2013. In those days, Kirk already had a vision of what he hoped Turning Point USA would become. Sukovich then volunteered for the organization when it was in its infancy and became a full-time employee outright. Later, he studied at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, made a run for state representative in his home district in Lincolnshire, Illinois, in 2018. He's now a law student at the George Mason University Antonin Scalia School of Law. Marco, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you.
And first off, let me offer my condolences. You knew him personally. How did you first hear about what happened on Wednesday?
I found out about it through just scrolling on my X feed. It's just the world that we're in these days where that's how you find out this kind of information. And obviously devastated.
Yeah, I can only imagine. What was your initial reaction?
I was shocked. And then there was some kind of conflicting information about like whether or not he would be able to make it out of the situation that he was in. And that went on for a little bit. So there was some confusion, and that was really terrible. And especially while that was happening, the video of what occurred came out. And that was really what I think took it to a different level for me. I really don't recommend people watch it.
Did you saw the video then?
I did.
Oh,
I did.
Yeah. I'm really sorry about that. That must've been quite difficult. I know a lot of people sort of almost saw it accidentally. It was spreading so quickly. What's your origin story with Charlie Kirk?
Sure. I'll just make one point. So Congressman Dold was running there in 2012, and that's when I had the chance to meet Charlie. And Charlie is a year older than I was. He was 31. I'm 30 years old. So at that time, high school students, he was 18. I was 17 years old. Interning for Congressman Dold, and a couple weeks before Election Day, he was explaining to a group of other interns about his designs and his vision for a group called Turning Point USA. And from that moment, really just enlisting and encouraging folks to join him on a project that had to do with engaging a generation of young people that had no one really communicating to them in any effective way about ideas and principles on from thinkers like Thomas Sowell or Milton Friedman or other conservative thinkers of the time.
What would you say was the dominant ideas that young people might have had that you and Charlie were looking to, I don't know if counter is the right word, or offer another perspective on? How would you phrase it?
Yeah, there was a dynamic where we wanted to persuade people, but then there was also a sense that there are a lot of people that are still forming their mind about what their political views are. And it was a space that was dominated by the political successes of President Obama. And again, that was his second election. President Obama's reelect campaign was in 2012. And so we were just very mindful of the political success of former President Obama. And we were just recognizing that no one was stepping up to challenge that in any serious way. And it was a clear opportunity.
How did the election turn out for Dold that year?
That year he lost by a couple thousand votes.
Yeah. And that was one of those seats that went back and forth a little bit in that time, as I recall.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
So how does Charlie and how do you with him take this, this idea from an idea to what it became?
Charlie has an amazing family. And brought him up with very clear principles of a strong work ethic. And also, I think, exposed him to the importance of having good mentors in your life. And Charlie embraced that very early on. I mean, not many 18-year-olds create space or thinking about who they're going to have shepherd them through a process of building trust and rapport with people that have the financial resources to put a vision into practice. And that was something that at that age, he had a space for in his mind about how he was prosecuting building Turning Point, and endeared himself very well and equipped himself very well when he had conversations with people that were sensing that
same feeling that we had about not many young people being exposed to conservative ideas or wanted to do something about it. And he brought a work ethic. He had a vision, a big vision that he was able to communicate to other people. And he put in the time to make that happen, which is the other crucial ingredient, that not many people have that kind of discipline or just intense focus at that kind of age.
You know, Charlie Kirk and Turning Point USA are seen as cool by many young conservatives, right? And especially back then, it's a departure from, I mean, no offense, but John McCain and Mitt Romney, groups like, you know, Young Americans for Freedom, don't really have that cool factor. You know, what difference did that make? You know, how do you think he used that to sort of, or leverage that to connect with younger people?
I don't believe all the pieces were figured out in those early days. There was, though, a sense that some of the messengers needed to be different, and that was a big part of it. And so by having young people that had some exposure to some of these different conservatives that have read certain things from conservative thinkers and then able to present it as something interesting and different. And a lot of the initial focus with Turning Point focused on issues like the national debt. I recall one of our early campaigns was Stop Kicking the Can. That was when the national debt was, I think, somewhere close to $14 trillion or something like that. And now it's obviously ballooned since then.
Pennies.
Definitely there was an important decision to engage in more of the social and cultural issues that really get at meaning, in the human experience. And I think that resonated with a lot of people. That kind of just leveled out of just the purely economic issues that obviously are essential and important.
So Kirk, one of the things that made him sort of famous in a sort of viral social media sense were these video clips of doing events like the one he was doing in Utah, where he would argue with people who came up to him, on campus. What was he like behind the scenes? Like, right, I have people in my family who enjoy kind of arguing for sport. Was that his total personality?
I'm not kidding when I say that he was very focused and about all times of day, you know, putting in the work to meet with people, to make the case for Turning Point. And he loved and engaged. He loved engaging with people that had different perspectives and different ideas. He relished that. And I think that really is a big part of what he brought to the civic arena, was that, like, we need to double down on hearing different perspectives and within the conservative movement and on the other side as well. That made him, I think, special, because so increasingly more and more people were getting information from sources that they were just comfortable with and not really engaging in any spirited debate with other people. And that really did, even at those times, that was very clearly something that he was interested in doing and looking for ways to do that.
I wonder if you saw Charlie sort of grow or develop or change over time.
Certainly there's a little bit of as the organization became more established. Tail end of 2012, early 2013, it was very much a volunteer operation. And, in your late teenage years, you know, early 20s, your sense of scope about things is maybe not as mature or as big as it is when you're, obviously, Charlie got married and has two beautiful children. And, you know, that's certainly there's any kind of, as anyone, there would be a development and beliefs and ideas and principles. That's the case for anyone, but also, you know, also for Charlie. I kind of knew him most before some of those big personal decisions in his life happened. So I can't really speak too much more about that.
Yeah, well, that's fair. You know, I wonder what you make. You know, he was obviously a very polarizing figure. A lot of people loved him. A lot of people really didn't love him, to put it mildly. And he's, you know, said things that were complex. Other people found them very hurtful. I wonder what you make of, you know, how he approached, you know, some of those very divisive political issues. And we heard some of that at the top of the show.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think that his approach opened the conversation. Like it brought it to people's attention. And these are some pretty important issues that really just kind of would get put by the wayside, or no one would really focus on them. And by elevating the discussion and using the platform that he was able to build, it got millions of Americans engaged in a public discourse. And we have, you know, a First Amendment not to talk about the weather, but to talk about very sometimes controversial things that have significant impacts. And that was very much a principle that Charlie understood and embraced.
I wonder how you feel his effect. I mean, you're in law school now. George Mason, I think, is known to be a place where a lot of conservative thought is welcome and encouraged. I mean, the law school is named for Antonin Scalia. How do you see, you know, sort of the idea that Turning Point USA sort of, has it made a change in the culture on college campuses, do you think?
Has it made a change in the culture? I think that's a good question. It has created a space for conservatives on campus to feel free to express themselves without just getting lampooned or harped on by the kind of the academia, the professor kind of system, and then a lot of the students that would just kind of jump on that bandwagon. And that's, among other things, there are a lot of contributions that Turning Point has made, but that has been one of them. The other has been to provide some type of footprint for conservative thought on college campuses, where really there hasn't been in any serious way.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take a break on the program. When we come back, we will continue talking about the life and work and the killing of Charlie Kirk, Illinois-born conservative political activist. We're talking for the first part of the show today with Marco Sukovich, who knew him and was one of the early people, first a volunteer, then an employee with Turning Point USA. Later in the program, we'll talk with a political scientist about the broader landscape of political violence in America. If you want to join us today, 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are talking about the life, legacy, and some of the controversies around the conservative political activist Charlie Kirk. He was the founder of Turning Point USA and had certainly made his name in right-wing conservative politics. He was a close ally of President Donald Trump, made a case for his MAGA agenda, and he especially connected with younger adults. He had a very strong social media presence. He often toured college campuses. But again, he was not without controversy. There have been cases where people found his comments offensive, recently on Taylor Swift, or I should say when Taylor Swift was first dating Travis Kelce, for example. He said, "Reject feminism, submit to your husband, Taylor, you're not in charge." Kirk was killed at a political rally on Wednesday. A 22-year-old Utah man is in custody. His motives are as yet unclear. Kirk was also an Illinoisan for most of his life, born and raised in Arlington Heights and Prospect Heights, respectively. He briefly attended Harper College in Palatine. We asked members of our texting group for their thoughts on this. Franny and Hinckley said, "These shootings are so incredibly sad. I am sure there will be more, and I don't know the solution." Christopher in Brimfield said, "Political violence is never the answer. Everyone should condemn it." Illinois Student Newsroom reporter and former 21st Show intern and associate producer Leila Nazarova covered last night's vigil, remembering the life of Charlie Kirk. It was at Gregory Hall on the campus of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Here are a few of the things she heard.
My name is Jerry Venuti. I live in Danville, Illinois, and I'm an American. This is terrible. It's terrible for me. It's terrible for the country. Charlie was an evangelist. He was a man who loved Christ and his country.
Hi, I'm Megan. I was honestly really affected by what happened yesterday. I am a Christian, I am a Republican, and I realize how afraid I've been. Gosh, I call myself a Christian, I call myself a conservative, but I'm scared to speak it out. I'm scared of what people will say about me.
I'm David. I'm a press man, a international student.
The communist is ended in our country for 40 years, but we never walk out of its shadow. It was Charlie who guided me through the lies of communism. That's the main reason I'm here to study in the great state of Americas. Charlie, he brought not pure violence, but through words and communication.
We have one chance to make America great again, and the moment is now. So let's follow Charlie's legacy and keep fighting and never give up.
You can join the conversation today at 800-222-9455. We're talking with Marko Šuković. Today he's a law student at George Mason University, but he knew Charlie before and in the early days of Turning Point USA. How do you think, Marko, about, you know, we talking about some of the controversy around his comments before the break, and you said he's a very sort of driven, thoughtful person. Do you, I mean, was a lot of that provocation? Do you think he fully believed it? Does it matter, I guess?
Well, first, let me just say it's just so emotional listening to some of the clips that I just heard.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
It just puts a sense of perspective around the kind of impact that he had. Charlie was one of the most sincere people and authentic people that I've really met in the political space doing this kind of work. I think that there really is no question about his commitment to these principles, and I don't think it's right to describe him as, I'm not saying that you have, but you know, you might see some of that commentary out there as some kind of shock guy who's looking to get the clicks. I mean, he believed this, and he thought that America would be a better place if he could persuade more people to these basic principles about our republic, our constitution, faith in God, these kinds of things. He lived it.
I know that he was traveling with security these days. I heard a New York Times reporter who had done a big profile on him earlier this year said he met Charlie for dinner recently, and even in that setting, he had private security with him. I wonder, obviously, when you knew him, he was not the national celebrity, sort of figure he became. But, I mean, is that something that you and he would have ever contemplated would sort of become a necessary component of being active in politics?
I could say at the time the concern was whether or not we would get a microphone or allow one of our chapters to be allowed to set up on a campus. There are often a lot of administrative problems that would prevent our group from having a ability to set up on a college campus and engage young people. I don't really believe that this kind of concern was something that just seemed, it wasn't really anything that was being discussed in a serious way at that time.
I don't know how active you are in politics today. What do you think of the direction America is going?
Yeah, it's a good question. I believe that there are a larger share of people that think it's okay, that would be willing to take an action like we saw that happened with this assassination. Or there are more people that would be willing to justify it or rationalize it than we've had in recent decades, at least. And so that's very concerning. And how you solve that, it's multifaceted. Arguably, we have to do a much better job educating young people with a civics education, a civics mindset, and laying that groundwork. And I think Charlie actually did a very effective job at communicating that. There's a faith crisis. There are all kinds of different things that go into that equation. I took some exception with what Governor Pritzker had to say.
It say more.
Like he, I'm sorry?
Please say more.
Yeah, he immediately, took the opportunity when asked about what was going on. Like, it was clear that he had no appreciation for the fact that, hey, this is a guy from Illinois, that Charlie was from Illinois. So I think the governor of the state might have something to say about that. But beyond that, he immediately decided to say, well, hang on, we have to think about who's fomenting this kind of discussion. He just invoked President Trump, you know, didn't say anything to the fact that, you know, President Trump, you know, was almost assassinated. It seemed like an opportunity to make some political statements when really there was more class that could have been used. And, you know, I could go more, you know, it's a pattern with the governor, in my opinion.
Hmm. Yeah. And I don't recall exactly the timing of when the news broke of the shooting with the governor. I did see he had a social media statement sort of condemning violence and expressing sympathy for Kirk's family.
Right. It was the earlier video. Okay. Immediate. It was kind of a quick react situation. That's what I'm referring to.
Sure. Well, in that, you know, tempers are running hot in America right now. And, you know, we're going to be talking about that later in the show. I know a lot of commentators sort of share the podcast listings with Charlie. You know, we're saying this is war. I wonder what you think of, you know, the rhetoric after, more broadly speaking, right, beyond Governor Pritzker.
Right. Well, there is a difference between taking actions and the rhetoric, no doubt. Inciting those actions, that's a line as well. I certainly think if you're an elected official, one of the top ones in the state, you have a higher sense of responsibility about how you use that platform. Then at the same time, Charlie was more impactful than many elected officials. And so there are people that shape the public discourse. Young people spend a lot of time online, a lot of time on hours. I mean, that's an issue, is the amount of time that people are spending there and not with engaging and interacting with people in their community. I think there has to be a serious conversation about that as well. People need to have more exposure to people that disagree with them in real life. I say that, and then you find out that this Taylor Robinson guy that the suspect that's involved with, the guy that shot Charlie, I believe his father had a role in helping to turn him in. So, I mean, in your own home, you have these different views. It's complicated, I guess. I don't know how you could have someone in your household that has that kind of view and then decide that this is a course of action that's worth pursuing. It's frustrating.
You know, I think ultimately, for a lot of people, Charlie Kirk is, like you'd say, a Rorschach test, right? Some people love him. Some people will hate him. But, you know, worth remembering, he was a man. He was a father. He was a husband. And you knew him as a kid working with you on a political campaign initially. How do you want to remember Charlie Kirk?
Yeah, he was a friend. In some sense, he was a brother, you know, older brother by a year. And so I want to think I'll remember Charlie like that. The kinds of contributions that he made to the conservative movement, though, are ultimately, that's the way I'm going to really remember Charlie. He set a high bar, but he set the bar that needed to be set for what it means to be an effective conservative activist. And he backed it up with not just a big vision and the ability to communicate that to people, but with the work, the time that it takes, and to remain principled throughout that process. I mean, that really... really is what I'm going to be remembering. Indomitable figure in the conservative movement, no doubt.
Marko Šuković is a present day a law student at George Mason University. He knew Charlie Kirk during Turning Point USA's early days and even earlier when they were interns for former Illinois Congressman Bob Dold. Marko, thank you for taking the time to be with us. And again, my condolences.
Thank you.
It's the 21st show. I'm Brian Mackey. For the entire hour today, we are talking about the life and legacy of Charlie Kirk. He was a political activist, founder of Turning Point USA, close ally of President Trump. As we've been talking about, he grew up in Illinois, Chicago suburbs, briefly attended college in Palatine. He was also known for his social media presence, debating students on college campuses, stirring up controversy with many of his views and comments. He was shot and killed in Utah on Wednesday at the age of 31. His death is being treated as a political assassination, and it's raised concern about the threat of, or I should say the state of political violence in America, no longer a threat. Joining us now to talk more about this is Nicholas Grossman, political science professor at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign, also the author of Drones and Terror, Asymmetric Warfare and the Threat to Global Security. Nick, welcome back to the 21st Show.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Listeners, you can join us at 800-222-9455. I should say we did ask our texting group about this. Jai in Elburn said, I didn't agree with hardly any of his views, but he also fostered spirited debate. Helen in Springfield said, I'm very sad about the assassination of Charlie Kirk. I'm a liberal, but do not approve of gunning down people with whom I disagree. And Jesse in Mattoon said, I think celebrity politics is why the violence is so bad in this country. If politicians would be the adults in the room instead of pushing every hot button on every news program that will air it, perhaps Americans wouldn't feel such outrageous, monstrous behavior was acceptable. We need more friendly politics on camera. Save the bickering for behind closed doors. All right, Nick, we're almost 2 days removed from Kirk's killing. How are you thinking about what's happened?
About the killing itself?
And the aftermath?
And the aftermath. It does look political. We are starting to get some information about the potential attacker and who, you know, is a suspect and innocent until proven guilty, of course. But where the initial attack seemed like both it had lacked security in that he was up on a roof and was able to shoot and then get away, at least for a period of time. It does seem like it's another sign of the rising tensions, rising violence of not that we are there yet, but it has made me think of things like the troubles in the UK and Ireland, or the years of lead in Italy, of these periods in history of sort of lower level non-state violence, not something that rises to a big civil war or anything like that, but nevertheless ongoing political violence in a very tense climate.
Does that include the 60s and 70s in the United States?
Sure. I think you could include that also. Yeah. The most, for example, most decade with the most terrorist attacks, not most deaths from terrorist attacks, but most in the United States was the 1970s. That is not now. So, sure, I think you could potentially compare it to them, though we'd need to see the exact numbers. You know, it's not a one-to-one.
What does political violence represent in a democracy?
Represents an anti-democracy sentiment that where democracy is fundamentally about solving problems without violence. We have, hundreds of millions of people in this country, a wide, diverse country, different types of people, different views, different backgrounds. And the way that we make these big collective decisions is by things like elections and debates and courts and other means that do not involve people killing each other. And when that then spirals out of control, when people start taking matters into their own hands and using illegal force and trying to either silence people or get revenge or do bigoted violence, attack groups they hate to try to advance their politics that way, it is part of a potential societal breakdown. And I can't separate it from currently in the United States of the democratic backsliding towards authoritarianism that is occurring at the highest level in the government, that these are connected. So we're seeing both the Trump administration work to dismantle American democracy by removing rule of law and checks and balances and things like that. And we're also seeing a lot of rhetoric about encouraging violence or at least encouraging hatred. And I'd certainly call those comments you mentioned earlier about online of things like this is war and they unspecified did this to us without ever knowing who the killer actually was at that point, of accusations that the left, also undefined, did this somehow to, conservatives at large. Based on what we know about the suspect, it does not look like that. He doesn't fit the profile of somebody like that. But this was not something coming from random users on social media who, you know, people will say stuff online that that's just, it's part of free speech that, you know, that happens. But this came from senior presidential advisor Laura Loomer, Elon Musk, who was the biggest donor in the last presidential campaign and runs a influential social network, and from the White House itself, that the President Trump in an Oval Office address, a videotaped address, so it, you know, had time to think about it, not an off-the-cuff comment to a reporter, but in an address, immediately blamed the radical left for it and promised he was going to crack down and use the attack to crack down on a variety of either fundings or to silence speech.
I'm sorry. sorry to interrupt you. We're gonna have to go to a break here in a moment, and we will continue with Nick Grossman after this. 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. We are spending the hour today talking not just about conservative activist Charlie Kirk's killing during one of his political events in Utah, but also the broader context of political violence in America. As we were saying before the break, this murder only served to amp up the violent rhetoric among conservative commentators like Jesse Waters on Fox News, Alex Jones, Steve Bannon, and others. There was a montage put together by the social media-oriented political website The Recount. Let's listen to that.
They are at war with us. Whether we want to accept it or not, they are at war with us. What are we going to do about it?
I keep explaining, we're in a war. The left has been saying put a bullseye on Trump, a bullseye on his supporters. They've been calling for violence.
The left is evil and insane and needs to be crushed with the force of the state. What are we going to do about this?
He talked about the fact that, you know, the American left is at war with us, and then he was murdered in cold blood. He was right. This is a war for the future of our country.
It's too late to turn the temperature down. This is not a time to hold hands. It's a time for justice. This is a time for good to fight back against evil. It is time for the righteous to prevail.
Charlie Kirk's a casualty of war. We're in this country.
The political left has declared a jihad against the right wing. The right needs to understand that this is no time at all to cower. This is no time at all to be silenced. This is no time at all to retreat.
The only other time in human history where someone or a group spills your blood and you end up on the same team, it's called conquering. Either they retreat, the left, or they are going to continue conquering you.
Thank you for your service. Whatever producer at The Recount watched all that and put it together. 800-222-9455 to join us today. 800-222-9455. We're talking with Nick Grossman, political scientist at the University of Illinois. You can also find him regularly offering analysis on current events at Blue Sky, nicholasgrossman.bsky.social. Nick, as you listen to those commentators saying the left is at war with the right, what's going through your mind?
So that's... it's really bad. I mean, it's not an actual act of violence, which is worse, that the person who killed Charlie Kirk did something that was over a more serious line and was unequivocally wrong. And, you know, that should not have happened. And what those various commentators are doing is trying to incite more things like it. Or, you know what, maybe they don't even care and they're just trying to rile people up to get ratings or to advance a political agenda or what have you. But they are still inciting violence. And not only are they inciting violence, it isn't even true what they're inciting violence about. So the person who shot at Trump at a rally in Pennsylvania when he was a candidate last year was a registered Republican, was a young man who I think his politics were more muddled, maybe more online and trying to get attention rather than specifically political, but very much not a left-wing ideologue. And it sure looks like the person who shot Charlie Kirk, who is a 22-year-old young white man, also was not at all this type of, you know, left-wing. And even on top of that, there's no organized violence. And if you look at the most senior figures in the country, politicians, Democrats are condemning the violence against Charlie Kirk across the board. And by contrast, we had not only a lot of those media figures that you heard, but also the president himself saying that blaming similar thing without knowing who did it, stirring up more incitement by blaming what he called the radical left. And it was so striking to me because that is new. That is not a partisan thing. That is specifically a Trump MAGA thing. That yesterday was September 11th. And so I've been thinking about this a lot, where George W. Bush, shortly after 9/11, went to the World Trade Center site in New York. And he said that the whole country is in mourning and we're mourning for our fellow citizens. And then the people who did this will hear from us. It was responsibly, not immediately declaring some enemy that he had for a long time, somebody he hated must have done it, instead waiting to find out. But there was never the slightest indication of left, right, were somehow separate from each other. And this was the way that all presidents approach this. You can hear Bill Clinton after the Oklahoma City bombing calling for unity and calling for calm. You can hear Ronald Reagan after he got shot and and his press secretary, James Brady, was killed, calling for unity and calling for calm. You can hear that from LBJ after Kennedy was shot. This was the way that presidents acted before. And now from the very top and from a lot of his supportive media, we simply do not have that. Instead, what we have is encouragement of division and anger and incitement to violence.
I mean, and something that strikes me about this is that you really see this sort of across the political spectrum. Sometimes there's ideological motivation. Sometimes it just seems to be like somebody who might is, and you hate to say this, but it's the reality in America. They might have done a school shooting if that had been a more of a target of opportunity, but instead they decided to attack, you know, politicians because whatever mental health problems are afflicting them. And, you know, there's a long list of these things in recent years, right? You can go back as far as 2008. This is something that I saw online. Kirkwood, Missouri, City Hall mass shooting. Democratic Representative Gabby Giffords at an event in 2011. Historically Black Church in South Carolina, 2015. Republican Representative Steve Scalise at a practice for the congressional baseball game. Of course, Illinois, Central Illinois former Congressman Rodney Davis was in attendance there. The plot to kidnap Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, the attempted bombing of the DNC and RNC in January 2021. Of course, the insurrection at the Capitol in January 2021. The attack on Republican Representative Lee Zeldin, the assault of Speaker Nancy Pelosi's husband, Paul Pelosi, multiple assassination against attempts against President Trump, the murder of healthcare CEO Brian Thompson, arson attack on Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro's home on a Jewish holiday, the killing of two Israeli embassy staffers in D.C., the firebombing of a pro-Israeli hostage march in Colorado, the assassination of Democratic lawmakers in Minnesota, and then the assassination of Charlie Kirk. It's a long and frightening list, Nick.
It is, and there are a lot that you didn't include. It would take too long to include all that. I also have to, you know, highlight how we didn't include many different shootings, many mass shootings, shootings at schools. On the same day that Charlie Kirk got killed, there was a student at a Colorado high school who had said a lot of anti-Semitic stuff online, who shot some Jewish kids. And, you know, that gets a lot less attention, being that they're less famous. But nevertheless, this is gun violence and related violence is unfortunately part of American society. And that is also why I think it is so irresponsible for leaders to stoke it as opposed to try to reduce it. That it might be a problem that cannot be entirely reduced, cannot be entirely eliminated. I really wish it could be. And I think we should strive for that. But one where they don't. And I think an important one that you mentioned there in particular was January 6th, because this is a good example of what I mean by encouraging political violence. Because not only did now President Trump, then also President Trump, stir up that violence and incite that violence with a lot of lies about the election, but also then, after getting reelected, led a lot of very serious convicted criminals out of jail simply for the reason that the violence they did in their attack against America was violence he likes as opposed to violence he doesn't. And that also, January 6th, was something that Charlie Kirk supported. And he also lied about the election a lot. And he bussed in people to participate in January 6th. And he defended them and he afterwards. And he strongly advocated for their pardons and for letting them out of jail. And some of them have gone on to commit other violent crimes. And this definitely does not mean that Charlie Kirk deserved to die or that he should have been shot. It is two things that everybody should be able to hold in their heads simultaneously, that the violence against him was very wrong, and also the violence he advocated and the hatred he advocated was wrong. And that doesn't mean that the violence and hatred he advocated was something that then caused the shooting against him or caused violence against other people. It's very hard to directly connect rhetoric. But his reaction to a different shooting was that it was okay, that it was an acceptable price to pay, and that it was an acceptable price to pay for the ability to own guns. And so while I strongly disagree with that, that would take a different attitude towards things like shooting of, the Charlie Kirk shooting or some of the others. And it makes one suspect that the standard, some people are approaching this with the standard of political violence is wrong and we should not have it. I mean, that's my stance. The idea that if I disagree with somebody or not, that means whether they should live or die, that would be ridiculous. People I disagree with very strongly do not deserve to die, should not be shot. Nobody should be attacking them, should be debating them, trying to defeat them in elections, other nonviolent means. But there's also the apparent argument, and this includes from the very top of the U.S. government, that actually political violence is good and should be encouraged when it's against people that, the people they don't like, and that it is terrible and awful and should never be done when it's against people they do like. So even in a comment, Trump himself, within 10 minutes, just yesterday, said both that what response do we need to the Charlie Kirk shooting? Said somebody's got to have to look up the exact quote, but it was, we're going to have to beat the hell out of the radical left. And also what we really need to do is everyone needs to respond to this with nonviolence. So that is, it's that sort of contradiction that the only way to really square the circle is as a kind of friend-enemy politics, where if it is violence against somebody that he considers a friend, that's bad. If it's violence against somebody he considers an enemy, that's good and he wants more of it.
Just 5 minutes left in the show. Let's go to the phones. Alita is calling from Normal, Illinois. Alita, thank you for calling in.
Thanks for taking it. Yes, I want to say something that's kind of affirming to the right, even though I am a liberal, I'm a progressive, but they're very persuaded that they are under attack. And I think that they are onto something there, but the source of that attack is not what they're attributing it to properly. The source of the attack is their own media. Their own media is making them afraid all the time. It's misportraying the actual intents and words and deeds of people that they don't agree with politically, liberals and Democrats. And that is why they are so ginned up and so ready to go to war, is because their media is goofing it. They are just being fed a complete line of, horse hockey. And the rest of us are having to deal with the fallout of that, and we're being mischaracterized as something that we're not. We believe in democracy. Democracy requires, fair treatment and communication, and that's what Charlie Kirk was about, communication. I don't think it was always fair, but there's room for that. There's no room for the violence. And most Democrats and liberals are going to tell you there is no room for violence unless you're just directly being violently attacked physically.
Sure.
There you go.
Alita, thank you so much for calling in. I appreciate that. Nick, just a couple of minutes left, and I'm going to have to hold you to it. But all this reminds me of something I think I saw in the last day or so from Sean Illing, who hosts a sort of deep political discussion show for Vox. He said, conversation or violence, those are basically your choices in life. It's kind of I wonder what you make of that and where you see the way forward here.
Broadly, I think that's true, that the, oversimplifying, of course, but that when it comes to advancing some sort of viewpoint, that there are two ways to do it, which is violent and nonviolent. And you think at the grandest scale, one of the most famous lines about wars, war is politics by other means. And so it is inherently political to advance agenda with violence, that this distinguishes it from criminal violence, of something where, purely criminal, not political violence, where somebody's interested in, getting revenge or stealing from somebody or, selling drugs to make money or, get turf or anything like that where it's personal, different from political violence, which is in some manner trying to impact society. And the other means to do that can be quite passionate, can be, quite serious, but are nevertheless nonviolent. And societies that try to have their strong disagreements that way are generally healthier than those that don't.
Nick Grossman is a professor of political science at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. He's also the author of the book Drones and Terror, Asymmetric Warfare and the Threat to Global Security, which I got to say came out in 2018. If your news feed was crowded out, be sure to Google Russia drones Poland and see how prescient some of his warnings were. Nick, thank you so much for being with us again on the 21st show.
All right. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
That is all the time we have for today. The 21st show, next week, we are going to be taking on, we're going to be taking on one of the topics that came up earlier on the show today. How to Raise a Citizen is a book by Lindsay Cormack. She is a political scientist. She argues that we count on the schools too much to do our civic education, and parents really need to take matters into their own hands. She's going to be in Illinois next week in Springfield for a series of Constitution Day events at the University of Illinois Springfield, but we will be talking with her in depth about her book on Monday. Again, the book is called How to Raise a Citizen. We're also going to be talking with the University of Illinois President Tim Colleen about some of the threats to higher education that have been happening and more. That's all coming up next week on the 21st show, which is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thank you for listening. We will talk with you again on Monday.